This is Broadway to Brazil, the remarkable story of Corinthian Casuals, the English non-league club who took football to the world.
Football is a sentimental culture. Where do you draw the line between heritage and progress? And when you represent a club that has chosen to set itself apart with its own respected ethos, how do you move with the times and maintain your unique identity? These are the questions that have faced custodians of the Corinthian Casuals legacy from the 1880s through to the 2020s. So how have things changed over the course of those 14 decades? In our final episode, we set out to answer the overarching question behind this entire series. What does it mean to be a Corinthian?
The word Corinthian still stands for an ideal, a concept of perfect sportsmanship. Can you define exactly this Corinthian philosophy?
You know, the history of the club is something that we try and add to, but we'll never eclipse it. You know, we can never do that. But the people that are at the club, that's what makes a football club.
And I tell them, what are you talking about? We're an amateur club. And some of them don't even believe me. So I tell them, no, literally we play for the love of football.
Corinthians Casuals means a lot for Corinthians because it's our like younger brother, our father.
Welcome to episode 8 in series 2 of Broadway to Brazil. I'm Dominic Bliss. As ever, I'm joined by my co-host, Jarek Zaba.
Hello, listeners. How are you doing?
And our guest for this final episode of the series is a man whose dulcet tones put us both to shame. It's Corinthian Casuals committee member and all-round good egg, John Forrest. Welcome, John.
Hello.
And smoother audio professional than either me or Dom. He's brought notes and everything.
I know. And here I am just complaining that I've forgotten everything I need.
So it's the end of the series. A sad moment, but a moment for celebration as well for those of us who have spent the last year slaving away over this. But yeah, to round the series off, we're going to end on quite a big question. I mean, it's quite a broad subject, so we're going to get through a lot of clips, old and new, as we learn more about what it means to be a Corinthian. And we're going to try and get to the root of that quite big question. Yeah, so Dom, why don't you tell us a little bit more?
Well, we've got 140 years of tradition to get through and changing ethos, I suppose an evolving identity of the club. Lots of things that were associated with the original Corinthian identity that are no longer associated with the current side, and lots of things that are, and maybe surprisingly in the modern game. I mean, John, over 140 years, football's changed so much. Mm-hmm. This club's changed with it entirely in some ways and not at all in others.
Yeah, I mean, the contrast between the historic Corinthians of the late 19th century and so forth, and this small amateur club in the Isthmian League in the 21st century, the contrast couldn't be more stark, really. But there's so much in there. There are so many threads, and I know you've covered so much of this in the series, that still link those two ideas of the club. And there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to investigate. It's actually a fascinating question.
And people have been talking about this for years gone by, as we're about to find out as we get on with the show and find out what does it mean to be a Corinthian.
Now, I love the story told by my favourite football writer, Geoffrey Green, retired from the Times, of an elderly Czech who recalled the Corinthians playing in Prague in 1909. I remember, he said, how they walked onto the field, spotless in their white shirts and dark shorts. Their hands were in their pockets, sleeves hanging down. They exuded an air of casual grandeur, a haughtiness that was yet not haughty, an indefinable something, and my, how they played.
Tony Lewis, the presenter of BBC Radio Sport on 4 there, speaking in October 1981, and summing up the power of the word or name Corinthians. That sentimental Czech admirer he's talking about is sort of still reflected in regular visitors from around the world, isn't he, that we see at Casuals today, John?
Yes, there's always an overseas contingent at King George's Field on a Saturday. And that, again, is part of our legacy, isn't it, really?
Prague 1909. I mean, you've been spending a lot of time recently hanging up scarves in the clubhouse that reflect all these trips, right?
It's something, it reflects an unhealthy obsession, I think, probably more than anything else. But yes, we've been decorating the clubhouse with scarves from clubs that the Corinthians and the Casuals have played on their overseas tours historically. And among them, actually, and we're talking about Prague there, and that gentleman is a scarf from Slavia Prague, which was presented to us when a number of their officials came down when they were in London to play in the European Cup, in the Champions League, because they still remember the fact that they were the first European team to beat Corinthians way back when. That was actually not until, I think, 1912. So 1909, they were clearly still overwhelmed by those haughty Corinthians yes. with their magnificent sleeves.
It's fascinating to think about, you know, that checkered Myra being replicated with all those other scarves. I mean, how many scarves are in there? How many countries do we think the Corinthians visited?
Do you know, I have no idea. I haven't stopped to count them.
Yeah.
We have almost completed the collection of clubs that are still in existence that Corinthians or Casuals played. Obviously, there's a number of old clubs in the the early 1900s that no longer exist, but it's pretty comprehensive. I don't know, I'll have to go and count.
No, it's great to bring a smile to people's faces when they come in and see their local club represented on the wall. And it's sort of our task in this episode to get to the root of that something that brings a smile to people's faces when you mention Corinthian Casuals. It's a big task. So we're going to break it down into four key themes and take it from there, because so much of the answer to that question depends on who you've asked and when you've asked them. For example, the Corinthian Football Club was founded on the principle that the team wouldn't enter competition or play for silverware. But we've already spoken in this series about FA Cup runs and the Sheriff of London Shield. Not to mention the fact that our first series was built around a promotion push. So that tells you that things have changed in each era. And there's loads of examples. The early Corinthians frowned upon teams preparing for a game by training. because they thought sports should be a leisurely pastime. But
try to put that argument to James Bracken, you know.
he might suggest that we still have one or two players who adhere to that.
I mean, I've actually seen the programme where they discussed overruling that old code because they're getting left behind. I think it was in 1965 when we reached the FA Cup first round. And it was written in the programme that the coach had changed that old law of not training because we needed to keep up with the other teams.
I think amateur football in the 60s was probably starting to morph into the semi-professional football that we know now. It was the 1970s, wasn't it, that the FA have abolished amateurism as a way of segmenting clubs.
Yeah, 1974, we discussed it in the first series. Yeah.
So that you could pay players, whether it was however little it was, but there was no sort of separation between the two. But in the 60s, yeah, I think the Corinthian Casuals, that rather old-fashioned idea of you tip up on the day and you just outplay somebody, we're starting to see that wasn't going to work. They were playing in the Isthmian League against some pretty good opposition, you know, some good teams around playing what was called amateur football back then. So you have to change to some degree, surely.
And we're going to be punctuating these conversations with voices from the past as well, as we've already shown. And they shed an interesting light on how the club's ethos has changed even since the 1980s. I mean, these tapes have come thanks to the family of Bill Wixon, a former chairman, whose daughter Gillian kindly donated cassette tapes of various radio shows, interviews and speeches that he'd recorded during his time with the club. And so, you know, we're going to use those to our advantage today to help us understand the views and the voices of previous generations.
Yeah, it's great. It's great having that archive audio to really bring it to life. And yeah, as Don mentioned, we're breaking it down into four themes today that kind of get to the root of Corinthianism. So those four themes are sportsmanship, amateurism, community, and tradition. So we're going to hear another clip now from Sport and Four, this time recorded at the Corinthian Casual Centenary Dinner in 1983. So we'll begin with that classic Corinthian value, sportsmanship.
The word Corinthian still stands for an ideal, a concept of perfect sportsmanship, a philosophy I'm sure that's carved across the heart of Bill Wixon, the chairman. Bill, can you define exactly this Corinthian philosophy?
I think it's the idea that you play football first for the fun of the game. You play to win, but you also ensure that you don't make any advantage over anybody else through any mean or unfair trick.
And how especially does it show itself?
Well, in the past, of course, it had shown itself in the penalty because, of course, if anybody deliberately handled the ball in order to prevent a goal being scored and the penalty was given, the goalkeeper was ordered by the captain to stand at the side of the goal, and therefore any penalty taker always had an empty goal to shoot into.
And what about it, Lord forbid? What if a Corinthian should be sent off the field?
Well, until recently, and I have to say until very, very recently indeed, he would have been sacked on the spot. He wouldn't play for the club again.
So this is an absolute classic Corinthian theme, this idea of sportsmanship. The penalty thing is probably one of the most mentioned things that we hear when we talk to outsiders about the Corinthians. One of the few things that people know is this idea of standing aside for penalties. The idea, yeah, that the red card means you shouldn't even be part of the club anymore. I guess this doesn't just show you how the ideals of Corinthianism have changed, but it's also how just the idea of sportsmanship has changed, right? Because I don't think anyone now thinks you're being unsportsmanlike to take a penalty and score it or to try and save it if you're the keeper.
Oh, that's absolutely right. When the penalty rule was introduced, the club was already playing football. Football had been around for a couple of decades in an organised form at that point. So this was seen as an affront, wasn't it? You know, that somebody could actually deliberately foul somebody else. No, unheard of. We won't participate in that world. Yeah, obviously that kind of thing changes. But he does raise a very, very important point there, which is just to play the game for the love of it first, and to do so fairly. And I think all of us, even whether you're a fan of professional sports or not, like to see the game played properly. Mm-hmm. And we understand that fouls and seeking advantages become part of the game, but there's a level to which that still becomes unacceptable to most people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And back then, that level was obviously, the bar was a lot lower, let's say.
Yeah. But the... Dom, the concept of the Corinthian spirit, that still very much exists, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's this idea that if you play with the idea in mind that everyone on the pitch should be trying their best to win without impeding the opponents unfairly and deliberately is there. But there's this kind of idea originally that competition and the rewards for winning a game would lead to cheating because glory became the aim of the game. And I think that's what the Corinthians originally were getting at. Don't get carried away with glory when you consider that you should be there to enjoy a day's sport.
I mean, it does sort of get to the root of a wider sporting debate. I mean, people, whenever you see a deliberate handball on the goal line, I'm thinking Luis Suarez in that World Cup the one time, it sparks a huge debate over whether he was right or wrong to do that, whether he was right to just do what was right for his team or whether he was just cheating, essentially, and similar, pulling the striker back as the last man and that sort of thing.
Well, English people, British people seem to have this tradition of disliking anything that's seen as sly. So
yes.
Even if someone was to sort of stunt the run up to a penalty, up until very recently, you'd always hear the commentator say, "Oh, I don't like to see that." Mm. And there just seems to be this kind of obsession with the sly tackle, the dark arts or whatever that get associated with other nations, but the English don't like that.
Yeah.
And yet there's like a leg breaking challenge goes in. And all the sort of British fair play people go, "Well, great challenge there."
Yeah.
And you think, "Well, he's broken his leg,"
yeah,
or whatever. So this kind of physicality can be taken to extremes because it's manly. And it goes back to that kind of public school thing, doesn't it? Manly, aggressive games to prepare you for a role in the empire.
Yeah, if you examine the principles of the Corinthians, again, you know, over 100 years ago, they still believed in robust challenges back then. It was a very physical game. Let's face it, you could charge the goalkeeper. Players were getting their shins broken and their shoulders dislocated on a regular basis. So they certainly weren't afraid of physicality in the game. But as you say, something sly, something that is against the rules, is immediately frowned upon. And yeah, and we still culturally in this country have a sense of that, even though it happens all the time.
And that's just really good you brought that up, because that's another thing Bill Wixon touched on in a different radio interview we've got. There was a show called The Name of the Game that had a special episode on sportsmanship, and he spoke about how the Corinthians were known for their rough play versus the professional sides when they started playing each other in the sort of 20s and 30s.
It's true that they were thought to be rough. And they were thought to be rough because they favoured the heavy shoulder charge, which was quite within the law, which was in fact outside the pro's usual play. And what the Corinthians would do, if it came to the question where a pro, shall we say, had the ball, and the Corinthian went for it, his best way of getting it was to shoulder charge his opponent. But having shouldered him, and sent him flying, he would then pick him up in a sporting way and there will be smiles on both sides. That's the spirit of the game.
Yeah, so I was laughing during that clip. I mean, it's exactly what you were talking about, Dom, with this appreciation for over almost violent physicality. You know, any of that diving sly business, none of that, but boshing a guy to the ground, absolutely fine, as long as you offer your arm out and help him back up again.
But that's it. So the Corinthian spirit in its own way was a, there was a dichotomy there, definitely. And it's about laws as opposed to what's doing the most damage, I think is fair to say.
And you found out a little bit more about what Bill was talking about in the other clip about sending offs, right? About how up until the 1980s, it was the case that a player would be excluded from the club if they received a red card.
That's right, yeah. I recently got my hands on a newspaper from the early 80s. It was the equivalent of the non-league paper, basically. In the early 80s, it was the paper for the Isthmian League. The back page had an article on it that was about how the Corinthian Casuals had had a committee meeting to overrule, or override, I should say, the rule that you would be kicked out of the club if you were sent off for two players in one game. And it was decided that it would be okay for them to stay on now. Things kind of had to change. Coincides with that earlier episode we did on how Billy Smith revolutionised the club, took it out of that public school image and brought it into the modern, I suppose, non-league football world that it still exists in today. And that was one of the things they did for that.
It's actually a good point. Yeah, these centenary clips that we're hearing is actually from the time when Billy Smith was manager, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, even as recently as 1998, David Miller, a former Corinthian Casuals player, but also a famous sports writer, he wrote an article ahead of an FA Cup qualifying game with Worthing. And, you know, this is just before the turn of the millennium, saying the club still had a rule in place that if you received two bookings for dissent, then you had to be brought before the committee for disciplinary action. So by that point, we changed our whole code to down to 2 points. It was to retain the ideals of the Corinthians and the Casuals for sportsmanship, and two, to complete at the highest possible level while remaining amateur. So they seem to be the two enduring points of the Corinthian constitution.
Yeah, they're probably still the two defining pillars that connect the club to its history. And regarding the issue there of dissent, I think that is still seen here as unacceptable. We wouldn't necessarily bar a player from the club for it. It would probably depend on the circumstances. But because we have this, you know, two yellow cards equal a red, now you can get sent off for two slightly clumsy tackles. There's nothing really unsporting about that. However, to argue with the referee, to say, for example, I don't know, spit at somebody, there's certain behaviours which would still be deemed absolutely unacceptable at the club. And really, I think most people would deem them unacceptable in sports. Here, we would probably still take the measure of excluding a player if we felt something sort of went beyond that limit. It's happened more recently with an incident with a player on the field who was sent off and was immediately terminated by the club in terms of his membership.
All right, I'm glad you said in terms of his membership.
Yeah, we did.
Arnold Schwarzenegger comes out.
There's a marsh on the other side of Tolworth where we.
Well, I'm here with two committee members. I don't suppose either of you attempted to raise a motion to bring back the sack him off for a red card rule?
I think if we were doing that, you'd end up with me playing. So, probably not. But seriously, you also have to put that into a modern context.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you're looking back at a very, very rough and ready game 100 years ago, even 50 years ago, compared to now, and what is deemed acceptable behaviour in terms of fouling, contact and what have you. You've got to move with that. You can't just sort of say, well, no, that was a foul, we're not having it. Yeah. Most of it's unintentional anyway. It's played at very quick speed and fouls are going to happen.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
Well, as Dom mentioned, it's still very much in the present-day constitution of the club to retain that amateurism, which moves us on to our next theme, which is amateurism.
So have you had offers? You could have gone and left and played at a higher level, yeah?
Yeah, I've been here 7 years. I've had offers consistently over those 7 years to leave and pick up 100 quid here and there. Here you turn up, the pitch is perfect, the people get behind you. There's never a single moan in the stand about the standard of football or what you're doing. It's always positive, and you won't get that many clubs. Like most supporters go to have a moan at the team. That's most non-league clubs because we're paying them 50 quid. We can have a go at them and we can abuse them. But here, no, everyone's supportive. Everyone wants the same thing.
So that's Danny Bracken there, goalkeeper and captain, of course, of the present-day team, talking about why he chooses to stay with the club, despite them being amateur. You get a lot of that kind of sentiment at the club, don't you, John, with the present-day players?
Yes, it's one of the things that keeps a lot of them here, obviously. As you know, players at Corinthian Casuals aren't under contract. They're free to leave at any time. We ask for a 30 days notice, but you know, we're not going to enforce that if they get an offer of a good contract elsewhere. So it tends to be what keeps them. I think Danny really articulated that well. There's an excellent playing surface here. We've got a superb manager who develops players really well. We've got a great crowd. You know, they really do get behind the team, and there's a real, I know it's a cliche, but there's a real family atmosphere. They know one another's first names, and I think that must make a big, big difference to them. And today, all right, the best we can do is offer players expenses to meet their travel requirements, because we've got guys coming from North London down here three times a week. So you've got to at least contribute to people's expenses. But yeah, no contracts, no salaries, and they're still doing it for the love of the game and, I would say, of the club.
We actually asked another one of the current squad, Rob Paratore, about this, and I thought it was really interesting what he said about how it affects the current squad, how amateurism kind of feels in the 21st century.
For me, Corinthians as a club shows that football isn't just about money and greed. As we all know, the players that play for Corinthians are amateurs, and we go there off our own back, and we choose to play there because we enjoy playing there, and we buy into the club's ethos. And yeah, that's what it means to me. Like, everyone at the club is very well respected, as in like all the backroom staff, the people that organize our kit and go there, run the canteen and the bar. Like, I've never seen it before, but a lot of the players really respect what they're doing because they understand they're volunteers as well, just as much as we are. And I think that's beautiful. And it shows how sport can bring people together. And for a club to be performing at the level that this club, as an amateur, to be performing at the level it is, and to maintain that amateur status, I think is something that's truly remarkable and should be continued. Because you could go to another club, like 95% of the squad could go to our rivals and get paid for it, but we don't. We choose to go to Corinthians. And I think that just breeds this kind of amazing culture in the dressing room that people want to be there. We're in it together. We all buy into the same purpose.
It's also incredible we managed to compete at this level, paying expenses alone. And we've only just started doing that again in the last year or so. Ben Checkley, another one of our current players, made the point that nobody outside the club believes he doesn't get paid.
Yeah, I think people definitely forget, because I get friends of mine that play in that the league below, and even the league below that in the combined counties league, they look at me and they're like, they make jokes about me earning money, like, and I tell them, like, what are you talking about? We're an amateur club. And some of them don't even believe it. So I tell them, no, like, literally, we play for the love of football. It's the passion that we have. And I think that's another thing that makes it special as well. You know, even us getting promoted on a £0 budget, I don't know if it's ever been done before, but if it has, it must be rare. And I don't even know if it will ever happen again unless we do it.
That sense of surprise that it's still possible was echoed by a former manager, Steve Banks, who was in the dugout here in the late 80s and early 90s. And he returned recently to do an interview with us where he spoke about what the current team are achieving on zero budget.
I think it's just lovely that there's a club still existing, an amateur club still existing in the pyramid somewhere. And I think, you know, what the club's done over the last 10 years or so is absolutely amazing. You know, really had no right to be as high as they are. And I think the fact that they've done that, still without paying players, and still maintaining that history, is a great thing to have. I don't think any other club probably in the country can do that. And I suppose all I would hope is that Corinthian Casuals stay in the league as high as they possibly can. You know, just keep, if you can stay in this particular league, it's remarkable.
Hannah Newton, the current club secretary, spoke about the connection between the players and supporters, and I asked her how much that owes to the fact that the players are not just here to pick up a few quid.
I think it's got a lot to do with that. I think it's got a lot to do with that. It's a lot to do with the fact that those players really take the time and make the effort to go and be with the supporters and spend time with them and, you know, remind them that it's not players on the pitch and supporters in the stands, it's everybody all together. It's that togetherness, Dom, that I was talking about earlier. Even when there's negative moments, the overarching atmosphere in that club is positivity. And I think that rubs off on everybody.
So we've heard two current players, a former manager and the club secretary there, and they all seem to sort of touch upon this theme of how much we're achieving despite our amateurism, and also that kind of connection that it helps to breed, particularly with Hannah at the end there. You get at the end of every game, don't we, the players coming round, shaking hands with all the fans, win, lose or draw, they come round and they always get a warm reception from the fans, and they're always very warm to the fans themselves.
Yeah, I find that remarkable that they still do that. Every game, and as you say, win, lose or draw, that connection between the players and the supporters is tremendous. We share their disappointment if they've lost. We share their joy if they've won. But everybody's there to encourage them, to shake their hand, to thank them for the effort. It's a great relationship. You see a lot more of that kind of thing the lower down the leagues you go. There's a closer bond between players and supporters, but I don't think you'd see much like it in our league.
So, of course, it can be easy to forget that all the way up until 1988, this club was entirely nomadic, didn't have a home base to speak of, didn't have a hometown, and that's still reflected in the fact that there's no place name in the club name. But since 88, I think the club, certainly in more recent years, and John, as community liaison officer, this is obviously very relevant to you, but has really started to develop those connections with the local area. That's why the next theme that we're going to look at is community.
For a club without any attachment to a local community, without any headquarters, without a ground, and with little money, to have lasted for 100 years is a miracle.
So that's another clip from the centenary dinner there, more from Bill Wixon. He's becoming a bit of a star of the show, isn't he? Mm. But yeah, I mean, he was right. It was a miracle that the club managed to last a century without a home. And as I said earlier, that changed when we arrived in Tolworth in 88. It has become home, really, hasn't it, this area?
It has, very much so. And it's been a long journey in making it home and getting the kind of reciprocation from the local community. And we owe a lot, obviously, to the fact that we live in the age of digital media and social media, and there's different ways of reaching out to people. And now you look around and there's a lot of local pride in the club. We're starting to see more and more local people coming to the games. The club itself is interacting with the community more. We're supporting community organisations, which is what a football club should do. And it's a wonderful thing, because you suddenly realise that as well as going to football on a Saturday, there's this whole other element to a football club and its place in the community. And I think, you know, from there you start to get into what it means to be a Corinthian today. And I hope that we're helping to redefine that.
Mm. And it brings us on as well to supporters, because supporters tend to want to watch their local team. And since putting down roots here, we've gained a lot of local support.
Yeah, and why don't we hear from two of those Tolworth-based fans who live within, you know, walking distance of King George's. You're going to hear from our audio engineer, Mr. Brent Davies, who's sat next to me right now. But before that, you're going to hear from Tony Davies, no relation. They both spoke about what it means to them to have a club that enriches their local community, their local area so much.
I mean, I now live a few minutes down the road, and until 5 years ago, I was unaware of its existence. But we came down here, started watching it, and we realised this was the history of the game. For me, it's the difference between watching a level of football that I've watched for 40 years where it's all about money now, and coming down to a club where it's about the roots of the game and playing for no money and the sheer enjoyment of football, watching football, playing football.
And one of the voices we haven't heard, despite his presence being there throughout, is our audio engineer Brent Davies. What does it mean to be a Corinthian to you?
It's a very difficult question, of course, but I think for me, it's probably just finding a club that has meant I could reconnect with football, essentially. You know, I sort of fell out of love with football. I've been a Mill supporter all my life and just fell out of love with football. And now I can come on a Saturday and come down to the club and see a game of football and be there with some friends. And then we've got the added thing, we've got the podcast, unearthing all this amazing history. And it's just an exciting club to be part of, I think.
Yeah, a community.
Yeah, we're very lucky in Surbiton. We've got a lovely community, and then this has been a lovely bolt-on. It's added to that community. Hmm. And it's another dimension which none of us, I think, when we started doing this recording, when we started the podcast, none of us were really expecting it would be such a big part of our lives. So, yeah, really quite amazing, really.
What, if you had to pinpoint it, what has made you fall in love with football about coming here? What do you think has been the difference?
Apart from being able to have a beer where you watch the football, you mean? We've got our own little spot in the ground, and we sit there, and I could come on my own if I wanted, and there would always be someone sat there that I know and that I could have a chat with. And like today, we're here with 20, 30 Brazilians who have just rocked up, and the atmosphere behind that goal today was incredible. So, yeah. Where else in London would you get that sort of atmosphere at a non-league club, an amateur non-league club? It's quite remarkable.
Lovely to hear two local supporters chat so passionately about what the club brings to the area. But Dom, it hasn't always been the case, has it, that the Corinthians have been so enthused about supporters, about spectators, in fact? Because you've discovered some interesting quotes from some of the old Corinthians. What sort of stuff have you found out?
The original Corinthians were actually quite disdainful of the idea of spectators because they believe sport should be a leisurable pastime, that you should be involved in playing sport, and that going to watch it was akin to loafing and wasting your time. And there's even a quote from one of the greatest Corinthians, an England international, PM Walters, who said in 1909, he'd played for us in the 1880s and 1890s, "The spectator, to my mind, is the curse of modern football. I mean the paying of others to play instead of playing yourself."
This is incredible.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you just don't hear that anymore. To think that top footballers, England internationals, at the turn of the century, felt that spectators were a curse.
Yeah, this is very different to the sportsman debate, where you can trace certain things sort of shifting, and you know the ideas of what constitutes cheating and bad sportsmanship shifting slightly. But this is completely different. You know, I don't think, there's no one anywhere out there these days arguing for there to be no supporters because being a supporter is some sort of laziness.
It goes down to their opposition to commercialism. You know, essentially they felt the sport was there for the moral and physical benefit of the boys and men who played it. And they were really snobby about people who gathering to watch because they saw it as some kind of perverse sickness in society that people were going to start paying money to watch people play sport. You know, it's just, you know, obscene. That was how they saw it.
I would suggest that he was probably in a minority at that even at that time with that opinion. But you can kind of see where it comes from. If you look at the sort of mid-late 19th century when football games, particularly as we know them now, rugby and association football, were sort of in their infancy and codes were being developed and it was starting to be played on a regular basis. It coincides with the re-emergence of the Olympian spirit. You know, the modern Olympics began in, what was it, 1898? And there was this belief that sport and health and morality were all kind of combined. So he's coming at it from that angle. But to be honest, that quote was what, from 1907?
By
1909, yeah. I beg your pardon. By then, you're a good 15 to 20 years into large numbers of spectators coming to sport. So again, I think it was a rather archaic principle at that time.
And as you say, it would have been unusual even at the time because of professionalism was huge by then. By 1909, professional football was being played in front of tens of thousands of people. And perhaps that's, you know, how he saw it changing, and he didn't like that. But, you know, PM Walters is a Corinthian legend. Let's not forget that. You know, he's one of the greatest this club had. And we only bring up this quote to show how attitudes towards fans have changed over time. Because you look now at how rooted we are in our community, how important the supporters are to everyone you speak to involved at this club. You know, the idea of any player turning their nose up at a supporter seems ridiculous now. And that's why I bring it up, that the whole episode is about how it's changed.
Yeah, and I imagine if the club played a role in a local community like Corinthian Casuals does today in Tolworth, I don't think PM Walters would be making those arguments. You know, he sees the supporters just as people who turn up on a Saturday to get entertained for a couple of hours, right? It's not related to this idea that we're talking about today of providing a support network, something to do, something to keep you amused in times of lockdown, as we've been discussing. You know, it's very different, isn't it?
And backing the team. You know, spectators is the word he used. We call them supporters now because it's completely changed. You're not there just to spectate at the football. You're there to staunchly support your team and help them win, you know, make them better, create an atmosphere that makes the club more appealing to other people. It's just changed, hasn't it? Spectator and supporter are totally different things.
Absolutely.
But it's, you know, let's compare it with this clip from Ben Checklett, current, probably one of our best players, talking about the fans now.
The fans that we have still sets us apart because it doesn't matter whether there's five of our fans there and 100 of the other team's fans, you'll still hear our fans louder than theirs. I don't know, it's like there's a certain level of passion that runs through at Corinthians, and that's what I'm really attracted to, you know. Like, that's the Brazilian spirit, I guess, and I've always been. I'm just someone that does everything with a lot of passion, and I think James is like that as well, and I think the fans are like that as well, and I think it brings the club very close together.
Lucy Simons, our stadium announcer, who we heard from in episode one of this series, built on that idea of evolution from gentlemen amateurs without a home to 21st century amateurs who are so closely bonded to the fans and the local area.
You know, we've come from greatness, absolutely, and we've come from this very privileged background. And what we've done is created this sort of quirky little oasis in the middle of Tolworth, right next to a motorway, where you can see some really scrappy but fabulous football and some lovely, lovely fans and lovely volunteers who really genuinely believe in what they're doing. And I think that is what makes us so special. You know, gone are the days, sadly, of the gentlemen. But actually, all the better for it, we've got these marvellous players who come in. Some of them are kids and some of them are older who've, you know, done glory days somewhere marvellous before, and they've ended up with us because they still want to play the game, they're still passionate. And for whatever reason, they choose to do it as an amateur, whether that's because they haven't had an opportunity to take some money somewhere else or because it's their active choice to remain an amateur.
I love that line, the quirky little oasis in the middle of Tolworth. I think we should put that on the sign.
Yeah, absolutely. We should put it on our matchday posters around town.
Yeah, and when you're talking about quirky, one of the quirkiest elements is definitely the presence of the Brazilians. I mean, this season, we've had a London fan group, a Corinthians Paulista London fan group, called Fiel Londres. They've been coming down to home games. They've started organising and getting 30, 40 Corinthians Paulista fans with their drums, making a lot of racket behind the goal. It's made for an incredible atmosphere. And earlier on this season, they came to a game at which they presented us with a cake. It was, in fact, the anniversary since the Corinthians Paulista founding. So they presented a cake. They gave our chairman, Brian Vandervelde, the first slice, because that means a lot in Brazilian culture. And we caught up with Lucas Dalanese, who's one of the Fiel Londres organisers.
Corinthians Caso support means a lot for Corinthians because it's our like younger brother or our father, whatever you want to call, but it's so important when Corinthians Caso move to Brazil and then we build Corinthians Paulista, so everybody knows about the history about Corinthians and Corinthians Caso. So it's very important to have this meeting for us.
It's amazing to see that when you all come here, immediately everyone starts to sing. There's the feeling for the team is the same, almost, as though you were at home.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same. That's, we have the same things, so we sing all the same things. So I think the energy that we have, that you support Kaz and support Corinthians, is quite the same. So the same songs, the same supporters. So yes, it's completely the same. So the same feeling.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Yeah. Can I give you guys like both microphones and you sing a song as a group?
Is yeah.
Aqui tem bando de louco, louco por ti, Corinthians. Aqueles que acham que é pouco, eu vivo por ti, Corinthians. Eu canto até ficar rouco, eu canto pra te empurrar. E vamos, 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 meu timão. Vamos, meu timão, não para de lutar.
Well, that seems like the perfect note on which to move on to our final segment. And this is a deep one. Tradition.
I cannot do better than to plagiarise from the bard. Now shall their names familiar in our mouths as household words. Jackson, Smith, Fry and Corbett, Cobbold, Bran. Bambridge and Walters, Foster, Reeford, Brown. Bauer and Morrison, Doggett, Blaxland, Creek, Ashton's and Molesdale.
Right, so essentially, James, we're asking everyone what this club means and what it means to you to be a Corinthian, to represent this club and everything it stands for.
Obviously, I'm immensely proud to manage the club. I mean, this is my seventh season, and if you weren't proud to do the job for free that we'll do here, then you certainly wouldn't do it for 7 years. So, you know, I'm immensely proud of being the manager here. I'm immensely proud of the progress we've made as well, because I think when we come here, the club was one thing, and I certainly think it's evolving in the modern time anyway, to be something quite different, you know, and we're still, you know, the eternal underdogs and all the rest of it. But we're a club that people now can come down, get behind, and at the level of football we're at, they'll see not only a good quality team on the pitch, but a team that's capable of competing at a very good level of football, which was probably wasn't what was here when I come. I also believe that the club is only as good as the people that are currently here. And I maintain that, and I speak to the board about that, because, you know, the history of the club is something that we try and add to, but we'll never eclipse it. You know, we can never do that. But the people that are at the club, in terms of everybody, from the people behind the goal, that's what makes a football club. So when I think about being a Corinthian, I think about all the people that get down here every week and support us. I think about the people that work behind the scenes to make sure the club functions and continues to you know, hopefully grow. Those people, for me, are what the club is. You know, the history is the history, but the club is the people. And we have a lot of very, very good people here. You know, I feel very privileged and proud to represent them, I feel. And then hopefully I can get a team on the pitch that represents us all. You know, that's the way I feel about it.
So two very different clips there that get to the root of tradition, if you like, at this club, old and new. The last voice you heard was, of course, the first team manager, James Bracken, with the type of well thought out, well considered, eloquent answer that we've come to expect from the man. But before that, you heard one of our voices from the past, Mr. Hubert Doggart, a former Corinthian, a cricketer for Sussex, who represented Cambridge University in 5 different sports. Just for the listeners' benefit, for some of our listeners who may not be all that familiar with the classics of Shakespeare, what was he referencing there, Dom?
Well, it's from the St. Crispin's Day speech from Shakespeare's Henry V, and he'd adapted it to include the names of loads of greats from Corinthians and Casual's history. He's naming these great players who will forever have achieved feats that have gone down in legend.
And we still celebrate some of those names today. If you come here on a match day, you know, we have the placards against the back of the main stand with some of the Corinthian greats from the previous eras. And also in the home dressing room, again, we acknowledge some of the bigger and more significant names that have been part of the club over the years. So those traditions are something that we still honour. Football has changed radically. Completely, almost, since the 1880s when this club was founded. The purpose of the club is no longer relevant. We're not here to provide the base for the England national squad, okay? So things adapt and things change. But the guiding, the founding principles of sportsmanship, of amateurism, of playing the game the right way, are still something that are very, very much active in our youth section. Now, a lot of the kids that come to play, boys and girls, are not going to go on to professional football careers. This is not a school of excellence. There's no way of disguising it as anything else. It's there for fun. It's there for the inclusivity and enjoyment and recreation of sports for young people. And if you guide them correctly and you don't throw them away simply because they can't do a roulette or they're not fast enough or they don't have a great long ball or whatever it is, if you continue to keep them engaged, then you can instill in young people values, and again, the values of sportsmanship, of fair play, of being part of something greater than yourself and doing something for the love of it rather than just for gain, then you're providing them with something that can help them throughout their lives. So yes, if there's a tradition there, I think that would be the one more than anything which represents the Corinthians of old and the Corinthian casuals of today equally.
Yeah, and on the subject of youth football, the school's 11 is something we haven't actually spoken about, but it's a big part of the tradition of this club. Now, the school's 11, funnily enough, isn't about school kids playing for the Corinthian Casuals. It's actually a team of veterans who travel to schools to play. And David Harrison and Brian Wakefield, well into their 80s now, but still very much involved in the club. They've been very much involved with the school's 11. They played for the Casuals first team and then went on to represent the school's 11 afterwards. And we were really happy to interview David Harrison about it. Dom, you spoke to him at length about his time with the Casuals, right?
I asked David about his tradition of playing for the school's 11 after your time with the first team has come to an end.
That was the thing that we all did, and we felt that, you know, we used to drive all over the country to schools in all over the place, but that was the big event on Saturday. We'd drive to Shrewsbury and places like that.
So the school's 11 is a If you speak to the people at the present day club, we're not a public schoolboy image kind of club anymore, are we?
No, not by any means.
But it is an example of those remnants of that history still being around to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, we are incredibly fortunate to still have gentlemen like David Harrison at the club. Someone who has given, 60 years of his life to this club, played it throughout the 50s and 60s. He's performed, I think, pretty much every role in the club as chairman. He's still a vice president. He's still very active on the committee. And he worked with the Schools 11, I think, again, for another 20 or 30 years, put his weekends and his time into that, recruiting players, organising the travel, etc., etc. To do that, really, for a lifetime, takes a certain level of commitment and belief in something. And that probably reflects favourably upon how special a club this is, that we have that calibre of people and they're still involved.
And another club tradition that David Harrison embraced is touring. You know, he was involved in organising tours to South Africa, France, Brazil, even Moscow during his time here.
Yep.
You know, the club is keeping that going to this day. We all went to Budapest to play two Hungarian sides in the Egri Erbstein tournament in 2019. And quite frankly, we all wish we'd gone to Brazil for the game against Corinthians Paulista, among others, in 2015. I mean, those trips were both celebrations of tours taken over a century earlier when the Corinthians and Casuals were helping to popularise the game around the world. So it all links back to this idea of the club's traditions influencing what it does today.
It links back to that admiring Czech we heard about at the very start of the episode, right? Now it might be an admiring Hungarian or an admiring Brazilian, but it's still very much the same thing.
Absolutely.
So, John, we've heard from all these other voices today over, you know, their perspectives on what it means to be a Corinthian. Why don't we ask you the titular question of this episode? What does it mean to you to be a Corinthian?
Well, on a Saturday, it means opening the club shop and putting up flags and grating cheese and all the things that we've talked about
before. And swearing at the ball being kicked out of play.
Absolutely. Sometimes having to go and fetch them from the field out back. But speaking more circumspectly about the club, I'd say, I mean, for all of us who are involved, it has become an extension, I think, of our family. There's a real sense of obligation, of involvement, of belonging, of camaraderie and community, which are all tremendous things, and it's an incredibly rewarding experience to be a part of. But more than that, I'd say we're obviously custodians of a great sporting tradition. Corinthian Football Club and Casuals Football Club and Corinthian Casuals Football Clubs are British sporting institutions which have, through thick and thin, held on to a set of principles which I still believe have relevance today. So to be part of that, more than anything, I'd say it's a real privilege. That's what it means to me, to be a little part of something very big and very important. And more than that, I mean, it's a lovely club. It's football. It's fun. What else would you rather do on a Saturday?
Dom, any advance on that? What does being a Corinthian mean to you?
Wow.
I know that wasn't in the script.
No,
it
wasn't. I was about to say, well, on that note, being a Corinthian for me is being part of the fabric of the club. The volunteers are generally people who came down to watch a game and became so involved in the club's, I don't know, fortunes, that they decided that they wanted to play a part in that. I certainly feel that way. We came down to do a podcast. We made a series of that podcast. And by the time that series had finished airing, I was looking to join the committee of this club so I could be more involved in the day-to-day running of it. And now barely a week passes where I'm not down here two or three times a week helping John put new kit on hangers or to hang pictures that we've discovered on the archives and spent hours trying to find in the archives on the wall of Corinthians from the 1890s, who I'll never meet and who will never say thank you to me for putting their picture up. And it's because I want to do something to help this club. So being a Corinthian, I suppose, is joining a long list of others and adding your own sort of chapter to a legacy that goes back 140 years.
Good answer. I would add one other sort of theme for me that I've kind of noticed. It's almost a dichotomy between evolving with the times, shifting with the times. You know, this club is dramatically different from what it was 100 years ago, and yet retaining and enduring those traditions and, you know, the really important things that are at the heart of Corinthianism. I think that's another sort of point there.
There's a quote that I'm particularly fond of by Bertie Corbett, who has been mentioned, one of the great Corinthians from over 100 years ago, when he was talking about the touring years, the great traditions of the early 20th century, and why they were doing that. And he said it was to popularise the ideal of sportsmanship and break down that insular prejudice which we both acknowledge and deplore. Now, to me, that's a very modern perspective. You know, you're talking about an enlightened global kind of awareness. It speaks of internationalism, of inclusivity, and of breaking down, as you said, the barriers between nations, which 115 years ago, you know, there was no TV, there was no internet, there was very little international travel. So for somebody to believe that sport can unite us, yeah, and can help break down boundaries, we still talk about that today. And football still has a role to play there. So being a part of a club that has endeavoured to do that for over 100 years, yeah, is a real privilege, and I'm just delighted to be part of it.
Well, that seems like a note to end the series on, I think. Yeah, so all that remains is really for us to thank everyone who has played a part in this series, not just all of our fabulous interviewees and our regular guests here in the Third Sea, also our audio engineer Brent Davies, who's tolerated a lot of multiple takes and telling us off when we're talking while the train's rolling by and all that sort of stuff. So thank you to Brent as well, and to all our listeners, thanks for listening.
Yeah, I think you've said it all there, really, Eric. You've thanked all the right people, but all that remains for me to say is that thank you for listening to our ramblings. Hopefully we've put something in some kind of order for everyone to understand the great history of this football club, and also, hopefully, the great present and future of this football club as well. So thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
Series 2, out. Broadway to Brazil is produced and presented by Yarick Zaba and Dominic Bliss, with editing by Yarick Zaba. Brent Davies is our audio engineer, and our title music is by John Forrest. Matt Alabuster did our artwork, and Chris Kelly manages the website, with additional thanks to Robin Hutchinson and the Community Brain, and everyone at Corinthian Casuals Football Club. Broadway to Brazil is part of the Highway 61 network.
Follow Broadway to Brazil on Twitter, at Broadway to Brazil, with the number 2 in the middle. And remember, the Broadway to Brazil book is available now, telling the story of Series 1 with fabulous photos from Stuart Tree. You can buy the Broadway to Brazil book from any number of online retailers. Head to broadwaytobrazil.com for more info.
And with gin and tonic in hand, we now come to a very famous man of British sport, Tadge Webster himself, former president of the MCC, of course. Your big moment came in the 36 final.
But I was fortunate enough to score the second goal for the Casuals at West Ham, and which proved to be the winning goal. And as I turned and walked back to the centre of the field, nobody took the slightest notice, I'm glad to say, except I heard Bernard Joy turn round to Tommy Hill and say, "Well, thank God the bloody man didn't miss that one for a change."